Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
It's Hockey Central at noon on your Tuesday. Welcome inside the program, as you just heard from Logan and trending now. Yes, the Calgary Flames continue training camp today at the Dome with an intra-squad game at about 28 minutes time, trying to mimic their first qualification round schedule against the Winnipeg Jets. The best of five, game two of that series would be at 12:30. Game three would be at 4:30, and that's likely the time of the scrimmage coming up tomorrow. Lots on that as the afternoon continues. As we kick things off in Hockey Central, a busy hour. Eric DeHatchek and Peter Labardius coming along the next couple of segments, and we kick things off with the Hall of Fame writer from The Athletic as we go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline to welcome in Eric DeHatchek in a different slot. Usually hear him at 12:30 on Tuesdays and Thursdays, but moving him up to the top of the show, and happy to have him along. It's been a while, Eric. How are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm good. You know what? When I played baseball, I was one of those good field, no-hit type of players. So I'm used to the leadoff spot. So I'm okay with doing this. You know, like if you want to bump Lubo back into the cleanup spot in the future, that's okay with me.
All right. Yeah. Hit him home, baby. Let's kick things off, Eric, as we were just kind of exchanging some notes this morning. Let's begin with the Hart Trophy finalists. As they were announced just a little bit earlier today, I would say about an hour ago, as the NHL comes out and says that the three finalists are Leon Draisaitl, Nathan MacKinnon, and Artemi Panarin. And you just had a piece in your notebook on Friday about Panarin and him being the wild card in this conversation. I think a lot of people focused in on the Oilers star who led the league in scoring. But how do you see this one? And I guess maybe thoughts on Panarin and why he is that wild card for you.
Well, yeah. So I think what in a normal year, and I voted for the NHL Awards, I think close to 40 years right now. And there has been a historical pattern. And it usually reflects upon whether a player is in the playoffs or not in the playoffs, right? And the best example, of course, is when Jarome Iginla should have won the MVP in 2000, and it went to Jose Theodore. And it was because a number of writers completely left him off the ballot because he wasn't on a playoff team. And that sort of bias or pattern or whatever you want to call it has been true for the entire time that I've been voting. So you have a situation like this year where technically, we don't know who the playoff teams are, right? Because the NHL is insisting that the actual playoffs will only begin after the play-in round is completed. So you have 16 teams that are candidates for 8 playoff spots. And in the case of two of them, you know, Draisaitl and Edmonton with Leon Draisaitl and the Rangers with Panarin, potentially these guys might be on teams that are not in the playoffs. So, but the pattern, of course, was skewed this year because there are 24 teams, and I think that is why Panarin managed to finish in the top three, because people, I think, are always looking for a reason to reward someone that has had an unbelievable year. Like, I don't know how much you were watching the Rangers this year. I was, because I had a couple of those guys on my fantasy team. He was unbelievable. Like, and not only did he immediately become their best player, but I've always believed that it is extremely difficult for a high-priced free agent in his first year with a new team to perform at a high level. You know, many players over the years, especially after the fact, have said, you know, they go out there in their first year and they're trying to earn that contract on every shift. And the minute you start trying too hard at hockey or anything else in life, you end up doing less than more. And so, yeah. So I think that he checks so many boxes in terms of what he's done for that team. And as I said, I think voters are looking for a reason to include him on the ballot. And when the NHL opened it up to a 24-team play-in playoff format, that was the criteria, and people moved him up to number three. And I think the other thing that's interesting and appropriate is that not always are the writers and the players aligned. So, you know, the Hart Trophy is for the player judged most valuable to his own team. It's voted by our association, Professional Hockey Writers Association, and the Ted Lindsay finalists, which came out a week ago, those are members of the NHL Players Association. And as much as I love the people in our group, I trust the players a lot more than I trust the writers, because they're at ice level, right? And they, you know, every single one of them is way more qualified than you or I or anybody else that sits 80 feet above the press box that are voting for these things. So the fact that we are aligned this year, I think, is a good thing. And, you know, I was a little bit surprised that Panarin made it into the top three. for the Lindsay candidates, and I wondered if that was sort of a prelude of what might happen with the Hart Trophy. So I was expecting this outcome, but there was a part of me that just wondered, because as I said, Panarin's the wild card, and historically, someone like him, as good as he's been, might have been cast aside in favor of someone that was definitively in the playoffs.
And it's interesting, too, because I think even before the shutdown, Eric, not sure, as you say, you watched a lot of the Rangers, not sure where you were on them, but what, they were 2 points out with 12 games to play. They had some crazy momentum. If this thing goes 82 games and we did shutdown, I don't know if we're talking about a Ranger team that missed the playoffs. They were right there to make it, too. So, and again, Panarin being the driving force with all that. So I think you turn that all around in a pretty little bow. I'm going to be fascinated to see how the vote breaks down, because, a lot of people go straight to the points leader, and rightly so. And that, historically has been a good mark to find out where the Hart Trophy goes. But this is a unique year, as you mentioned, with the 24 teams. And outside of that, they were making a push on their own. And Panarin was the center of attention and all that.
Yeah, they were really good. And you're right. No, I was watching them. And I mean, they were a long way back, Will, put it this way, if they had played the final 3.5 weeks of the season at the level that they had played the previous 4 weeks and put up points at that percentage level, maybe they could have caught someone. But that sometimes obliges a team to fall out of the mix. I mean, where was it? Toronto was 8, Columbus was 9. Basically, would have had to pass both to get to that final 8. So it would have been a challenge. That's part of what makes this whole season or postseason or whatever. I'm not really good on my terminology. I guess the qualifying round is what the NHL officially wants us to call it. It makes for a tremendous amount of intrigue. But I just want to address to Leon Draisaitl, because it was interesting. The column I wrote on Friday, I was surprised that there was an awful lot of anti-Draisaitl sentiment, and I guess it's because not all of the advanced stats support what we saw, which was a guy that, he's such a physically dominant player. I like watching Leon Draisaitl play because it's skill and power, right? And I think that those, that's what made Jerome McGinley such a watchable guy and eventually a Hall of Famer. And so, he won the scoring title by a lot. He was a real good player for them. There was one period sort of in the season where there was a bit of a black hole for him, but the 5-6 of the season, he was tremendous. And I think that, when Connor McDavid was out, he helped carry the team, kept them in the playoff mix. So I just think it all adds up. I mean, if Kucherov is going to win the MVP last year because he kind of ran away with the scoring title, I don't see very many people not putting Leon Draisaitl at the top of their ballot. I think he's won the award. And then, of course, Nathan MacKinnon, it's good. I think MacKinnon will be the runner-up now for the second time in 3 years. So, as I've told you multiple times, I thought he was the MVP the year that Taylor Hall won it. Just my opinion, but from what he did to take that very bad Avalanche team into the playoffs, put him on his shoulder, he was the MVP of that season. And, and then again, this year, the way he played, the consistent level of his performance during injuries to Rantanen, who he often plays with, to Landeskog, who he often plays with, the rotating cast. I mean, Jared Bednar, kept it, a variety of different people, playing with him, people that probably are not used to playing with the likes of Nathan MacKinnon. He didn't miss a beat. So he had a tremendous season. And I have to say, I'm staring there at the top of my ballot, and I was wavering between those two guys, which to put first. And I think I put Draisaitl first, but to me, there was a real 1A quality to the two top guys. In fact, the whole trophy races this year, it seems that, three is how many nominations the NHL announces. But, the Norris, I think, is down to two. The Calder is down to two. It's going to be real interesting to see how this all plays out. So it's one of the more fascinating years, I think, in terms of trophy balloting that we've seen in a long time.
Eric Datchik's our guest from The Athletic every Tuesday and Thursday here on Hockey Central at noon. The Calgary Flames are about 19 minutes away from game number 2 of their training camp, intra-squad game number 2. Of course, it is a week today officially of the return of the NHL, Eric, because the exhibition games will kick off in Edmonton and in Toronto. The Flames will play the Oilers at 8:30 a week from now at Rogers Place. You can watch that one live on Sportsnet. That'll be the first time many fans will be able to get their eyes on what the Flames have been doing. But I guess just your thought as we sit here today, you know, I don't know where you were at. I know you and I talked earlier on in the pandemic on the morning program and, you know, kind of just discussing the return of sports. I don't know where you've been in this entire thing, but now that we are, you know, officially a week away, it's just kind of that surreal feeling that we're going to have hockey in July and in August. And again, we don't know how long it lasts once they begin, but it just, for me, Eric, it was, you know, boy, it was going to take a lot of work to get here, and hat tip to the NHL because they've done a great job, but it's crazy to think we're now just a week away.
Well, you know, that's actually, you know, well summed up. And it's true. Like, there is a part of me that, you know, this kind of sort of segue into summer mode, because that is often what happens around the middle of July. So, you know, like, we follow the same schedule year after year. It's like being a student, right? You know, it's September to June. And you know, for the most part, just because of the way free agency sets up, you know, if you do what we do for a living, you work until about July the 15th, and then you shut her down for 6 weeks, and right around Labor Day, you pick it up again. So yes, wrapping your head around the idea of, you know, not only the exhibition that you alluded to, but the fact that on August the 1st, you know, they're playing for real, and it's a whole pile of games. So it's like the first round, and then we get another first round. So the content, we've kind of gone from 0 to 100 in a very short period of time. And especially if all things stay well on the health front and you get all these games in, I am interested to see what the television ratings are going to be for this, because I get it from both sides on social media. There's a percentage of people that say, you know, hockey is a winter sport. I'm not interested in watching it in the summer. You know, I'll note the results, but in terms of investing, you know, 2.5 hours of my time, no, not interested. And then, but I get the other two where, you know, like, people are talking about watching as many games as they possibly can, certainly watching the games featuring their favorite teams. You made a reference to it earlier on about how these games are staggered at different times. It will feel like an Olympics. Like, you know, I've covered enough Olympics in my time that just feels skewed too, right? You know, sometimes you're at the rink covering, you know, Sweden Belarus at 12:30 in the afternoon, and then you're sticking around for the Canada Czech game later that night. So there'll be a lot of that element to it. So an element of the traditional playoff, an element of international competition, an element of Timbits hockey because everybody's in the hotel together, probably playing mini sticks in the halls. It's just going to be interesting. It's just so different than sports is the ultimate reality television show, right? It's not scripted. You don't know how it's going to turn out. You know, the variable of everybody being off for 4 months, you know, has turned it, I think, into just a complete free-for-all. And my guess is that every captain of every NHL team is standing up in the dressing room at some point before they drop the first puck saying, you know what, this is a unique and rare opportunity. And we've got faith in the people in our dressing room. I'm sure every team feels that way. And let's see what happens, because you never know. Somebody is going to be standing and circling the ice with a Stanley Cup in 9.5 weeks' time, and why not us? So, yeah, let's see. Let's see. It should be good theater.
Yeah, and then you mentioned the reality TV. I was laughing yesterday because they had those, you know, broadcast details released and, you know, teams and where the certain guys will be, and Chris Cuthbert's going to be in the West and Jim Houston in the East, but Eric, the game's going to be on a 5-second delay to make sure there's no language, because of course there is no crowd and we're going to hear everything.
And Aaron Porcelain from The Athletic did a great job on that and story they did a week ago, just about how careful they have to be, because let's face it, you know, there is a lot of colorful language set at ice level, and it's just reaction, right? I mean, you know, like, somebody crashes you into the boards, you know, an expletive might slip out of your lips. So it's a bit like watching, you know, ballers on television. I was noting it the other day, and it's not the version that I saw on HBO or Showtime or whatever had it. You know, there was a lot of bleeping out expletives. So, that'll be an interesting part of the whole thing. I think the greater issue, of course, is going to be, you know, what the effect of no fans in the building has on the energy levels of the team. Because, you know, John Cooper was saying this about a week ago, and I thought it was really true. He said that, you know, like in a normal NHL playoff series, if you're at home defending a one-goal lead, that crowd is willing you to that victory. You know, like, you know, they're on their feet, they're cheering, they're yelling, and you know, it just creates a level of desperation among the players from being in that atmosphere that, you know, that you find a way of winning that. And to take that away, like, no one knows what the reaction is. Like, everyone plays hard and you know, there's so little room out there on the ice, but crowds all the time, but crowds, especially in the playoffs, make a difference. And the absence of that, and I don't care, you know, what kind of piped in noise you have. I don't care what, measures they take to try and create a crowd-like feel, it's flat out not going to be the same. And I think that will be one of the things that I'm most interested in hearing from the players after a game or two. What was that like? And how long did it take to get used to it? And did it at any point ever stop feeling like a scrimmage? Because I did something a couple months ago when the Flames had played that game in New Jersey in 1987, where they did play in an empty building because of a snowstorm. And talking to a number of players that were in that game, that's what they said. They couldn't get the intensity going. They just felt that, you know, that, you know, a goal would be scored, and it was like a goal being scored in an old-timers game. It's like, did that go in? Did that go in? Okay, back to center ice and drop the puck. So, I mean, you know, a lot more at stake in this tournament than there was in a regular season game in 1987. But you cannot deny the fact that the crowd is a living, breathing thing, and it contributes to the atmosphere.
Eric Tkachuk's our guest. A few more with him here on Hockey Central at noon. So, you know, you kind of answered it there, Eric, but I'm just curious, your overall thought, like, will the quality of hockey be worse, do you think, in terms of what you're usually seeing in a playoff, just overall in the sense of what we're going to actually see, or do we not know right now?
I can't put my finger on it, and it has less to do with the crowd than wondering how much rust there will be on teams. So they're playing one exhibition game, and then they have to hit the teams in the play-in round have to hit the ground running. And as you well know, it often takes players, like the best comparable is teams coming off a bye week. So they're away from the game for a week. And what do we hear from every team? It just, you know, they felt slow, they felt sluggish, they felt out of sync in 1 week, right? In 1 week. So now they've been off for 4 months. So how long are they going to feel slow and out of sync before they rev up and get it going? So what I anticipate is that I do think that hockey will be sloppy in the beginning, and you know, there will be some casualties early on. But the one thing that I do think will also happen is that as teams get into the rhythm of it, so, you know, let's say we're past the play-in round, let's say we're even past the first round, now we're down to eight teams. Now you've got teams, hopefully, that are healthy, that are fresh, and that aren't running on fumes, because that's unfortunately what happens in normal NHL playoff seasons. Once 16 becomes 8 and 8 becomes 4, you know, those players look bedraggled, they look worn out, and it becomes almost like an episode of Survivor after a while. You know, people are just running on fumes. And so instead of seeing the quality of play decline like you normally see in a playoff, I think the quality of play is going to rise, and there'll be an uptick after the first round and an uptick after the second round. And so we may see, you know, the best hockey being played at the end of the playoffs instead of two teams just sort of hanging on. So that to me is the one development that could be really good. You know, the idea that, you know, everyone's had a chance to rest, and once they get the rust off, and if they stay healthy and you know, no COVID complications, we could have like a unbelievably great semifinal and Stanley Cup final this year.
What about, you know, these play-in rounds? I guess as we get closer and closer, I'm not sure if you and Kelly have talked in length about them, but which one, you know, jumps out to you? Which one are you really going to be glued to? Because there is, you know, a lot of hockey that's going to be played, as you just talked about. You're very curious on the ratings. Everyone's not going to watch three games a day, but they might watch one. If there's only one series you could watch, I guess, which one are you dialing in on?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm going to say Calgary and Winnipeg because it's an 8-9 team. I think, you know, they were very close in the standings. I think they're, you know, like you know, Winnipeg may have an edge in goal. Calgary might have an edge in defense. You know, on up front, pretty close. I think both teams play a kind of a fun style of hockey. I think it could be really good competition. I really do believe that Calgary-Winnipeg is going to put on a show. If I wanted to pluck a series out of the Eastern Conference, I'm going to take Carolina Rangers. And it's partly because I think both of those teams, as you pointed out earlier in the segment, you know, the Rangers were playing great at the break. And so if they can find anywhere near that level, they could be a real dangerous opponent. And they've got that young goaltender, Igor Shesterkin. If for sure, if he can play at the level that he was at, they're going to be a dangerous team because they'll have enough scoring. And you know, he was, you know, really stingy in goal. But then, you know, the Hurricanes made some moves at the trading deadline, you know, to bring in the likes of Sammy Vatanen. And I mean, Sammy Vatanen never played a game for them, right? And so this will be his first opportunity to play. But Dougie Hamilton is now healthy and ready to go. So their blue line looks really, really good. Now, can Peter Mrazek, you know, hold it together in goal? I think that's the big question mark there. But I love their forwards and I love their defense. And if they get any kind of goaltending, they could be a really dangerous opponent and also a fun team to watch. So I just think, and I think Carolina Rangers is actually the very first game in this play-in round.
And the Rangers were 4-0 against Carolina this year.
Those teams are really fun to watch, you know. So again, if you're just watching hockey for the sake of watching hockey, I think they could put on a really good show.
What else are you working on right now, Eric? I guess all the awards are kind of up and spoken for. As you mentioned, it's kind of now a two-man race in a lot of these. But what's keeping you busy and what do you keep an eye on here as we are a week away from hockey?
It's a lot of the things we just talked about, you know, just trying to, you know, piece together some preview materials for, you know, the play-in round and just, you know, trying to get a sense from you know, people that I know in the industry of what they're expecting and, you know, most of the answers seem to be, we don't know what to expect, but that's good. You know, so, but I can't just print that. I got to write something a little more detailed than that. So I'm going to kind of explore what it might look like. And, you know, and then, you know, kind of, we're really kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. You know, luckily, you know, we've got Scott Cruickshank covering the training camp for us. So I haven't had to do that. So yeah, I'm sort of half a foot in, you know, holiday or taking a quick breather, you know, before it gets really busy again. And as I say, working on preview stuff. So nothing as earth shattering as when we were doing, you know, weekly blitzes and I was writing about books and movies and music and architecture. And there was an awful lot of feature material that has filled the last 4 months of my life. You know, in the next little while, we're going to be doing a little bit more of the he shoots, he scores, which, you know, is what attracted me to sports writing in the first place. Not enough he shoots, he scores anymore, Will, and too much of the other stuff. So if we get a lot of he shoots, he scores and not a lot of stories about the health complications and this and that, you'll find one very happy hockey writer.
Well, I wish you all the best, Eric. Always fun to catch up, my friend. And take care of yourself and enjoy the hockey.
Okay. Thanks, Will.
You bet. There's Eric Hatchick of The Athletic, the Hall of Fame writer, joining us to kick off Hockey Central at noon this afternoon, and happy to have him along every Tuesday and Thursday, as I say, usually at 12:30, but today at 12 noon. He's down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, now open for limited dine-in service with all safety precautions in place. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975 at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Take a break and come back with Peter Labardius live from the Dome. The Flames taking on the Flames in intra-squad game number 2. We've got some good news when it comes to the injury list for the Calgary Flames. All that with Lou next right here on Hockey Central, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back to the program. It's 12:30 on your Tuesday, and the puck drop is just moments away at the Dome. We're going to head there live in just a second for intra-squad game number 2 as the Flames are getting set to travel to Edmonton on the weekend to be, of course, part of the NHL's Phase 4 in the return-to-play plan, which is the qualification round. Best-of-5 series against the Winnipeg Jets, and the Flames have tried to mimic their intra-squad game schedule the exact same as what you would see in the Flames and Jets series, which means this game at 12:30 and tomorrow's game going at 4:30. And tune in later on this afternoon as we are giving away a box of Opeachy Platinum Series Upper Deck hockey cards. Pat and I have got a card of the day. We'll give you clues throughout the day as to which famous athlete is on that card. If you think you know who it is, you can text in your guess along with your name to 960-960. We take a winner from all of the correct guesses, one per day. And the best part is the box of cards is sent directly to your house. Upper Deck, collect the best, home of the world's greatest athletes. Visit upperdeckstore.com. And let's continue along in Hockey Central. Head to the Dome right now and chat with Peter Labardius.
Flames insider Peter Labardius, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Lou, how are you, sir?
I am fantastic. And quick early update, Zach Rinaldo has scored early in this second inner squad game on a couple of bang-bang rebound opportunities that he was able to beat David Riddick in close. He's back on the line today, again, with the likes of Mark Jankowski and Tobias Reeder. Probably the big news is the return of Derek Ryan, who left the first practice of camp way back on July 13th, which seems like about 36 years ago for some reason. And he is back, and he's on Team White to start on a line with Alan Quine and Austin Zarnik.
So there's a lot there, Lou, and I guess let's start with Derek Ryan, because I think a lot of people were wondering what was going on with him. You mentioned he was at the first practice, then left. Anything that you can glean from the line combinations, like what does that mean for this return of Derek Ryan? And you know, we've talked about it a lot. I know that you are very high on the importance of this man to this team, but what does Derek Ryan's return to the camp mean for this group?
Well, it's great, and I don't think I would read a whole lot into where he is today, because when you've missed that time and you've been favoring something well, you need to get him up to speed. So that's what's really important. As things play themselves out, I think he is going to have immense importance. He's one of your top penalty killers. He, needless to say, has been used on power plays, so versatile. You know, during his whole career, Derek Ryan has always distributed or showed, whether it was at the University of Alberta, Europe, even I thought last year in the playoffs, has always been a good player in those situations. So I just think it's great to have him back. My guess is tomorrow he will be back with the main group at practice. But it is great, great news for this particular team, and it makes you wonder about what this team is going to continue to do, whether it's Mark Jankowski, who might potentially fit in that respective spot, because I could very much see the pairing. And, you know, we talk a lot about pairings as much as we talk about lines, and we should. I really think by the time August 1st rolls around, very likely to see a Ryan-Reeder pairing. But it also depends on what's another developing story. Is for a second straight game, and even in practice yesterday, well, Sam Bennett in the middle again today of Milan Lucic and Dylan Dubé. And as a line, if it works, and there's still lots of time, in fact, they were scored on in their first shift today, which won't sit overly well with anyone. But that's an X-factor type group when you think about some of the potential matchups with the Jets that we'll continue to get more into, not necessarily on our show today, but as we build our way towards August the 1st.
You know, I want to jump back to Bennett in a second, Lou, but you just mentioned off the very top the man who opened the scoring in today's inter-squad game. And that, to me, I'd love to get your opinion on where Zach Rinaldo fits on this team, because played 19 games. Every game it felt like he was impactful. He seems like a guy who was very well liked by his teammates. He brings a ton of energy and really brings something the Flames have nothing of in terms of the physicality and the energy that you're looking for out of a fourth line type of guy that's going to play 8-9 minutes. And Winnipeg not necessarily a massively big team, but they're a team that can play physical. I'm curious where you see Zach Rinaldo fitting when this thing gets going on August 1st.
Well, it depends on two things. The competition, Austin Zarnik, who was not at his best in the inter-squad game and yesterday was not part of the main group, would be someone I would potentially see having an opportunity to be in a fourth line right wing spot. But you know what it boils down to, my friend? As much as it what it is that he does, that's a big part, but what do you need? So what do you need when you think about your lines, minutes, special teams, responsibilities? Yes, he gives great energy and physicality to this group. And if what we've seen so far, because as much as it's about today and what we saw on Sunday, and we'll be, you know, working towards the exhibition game and then the tune-up process to get to Saturday, August the 1st, that's the questions that need to be answered. You know, what do you need? And listen, coaches have had 4 months, by and large, to think about this matchup, what they need. But as Jeff Wardwell, and you've heard him, has talked about, and I've labeled this competition week, this week really matters. Not only the games, but practices, your habits, who's progressing, who isn't. But in the case of Zach Rinaldo, you know, and it starts well today, just right now, in on a forecheck to allow Derek Forbort to let a left point shot go that tests David Rittich. And Rittich hangs on for a stoppage. Just, you know, I don't mind throwing a little play-by-play as we go along here.
Love it.
So it's he was pretty good the other night. Rinaldo's off to a nice start here this afternoon.
He's Peter Laborius live at the Scotiabank Saddledome. As yes, the Flames and the Flames have just kicked off inter-squad game number 2 of their summer training camp as they get set to head to Edmonton on the weekend. They will play their first exhibition game in exactly 1 week's time, 8:30 from now, or it's next Tuesday, 8:30 against the Oilers live on Sportsnet, and then, of course, kick things off against the Jets in the best of 5 on August the 1st. So what are you looking for today? You mentioned, you know, progress, trying to build. We just talked about where certain guys fit and focused in on Zach Rinaldo, but what is the Flames looking for? What are you looking for, Lou? And I guess maybe this can even circle back to Sam Bennett down the middle.
Well, a quick cut-in, Matthew Tkachuk just slammed the gate. He inadvertently took a Michael Stone slap shot off a foot or an ankle, so we'll keep an eye on that. What are you looking for today? What you're looking for, Will, I think, is better structure and better attention to detail. The game on Sunday very much, I thought, dictated itself to skill. In terms of the structure was good, but when this team gets ready for the Winnipeg Jets, you need to defend. In the playoffs, you need to defend well. And everything in their practices, they had a great practice yesterday, and as this camp and week and the next 2 weeks build, your attention to detail, Will, is paramount. And who's willing to do that and get that side of their games up to a level? Because as much as, and I've touched on this a little bit this week, as much as last year's playoff situation for many boiled down to McKinnon and the best players on the Avalanche being way better than the Flames' top players, I'm not going to deny that wasn't a big factor. But as we've even heard from Jeff Ward, and you know you and I have talked about this, I thought that Colorado's attention to detail as a team was the difference in a lot of ways. The commitment that they had from their group to backtrack, they gave the Flames, as you know, Will, next to nothing the entire series. Yeah. So what's the game all about? The more I have the puck, then I give my best people an opportunity to get something done. And that, to me, has been an undervalued part of what happened last spring.
And it's crazy when you think about, like, just the little details of the game, right? Things you learn back in Pee Wee or Bantam, and You mentioned defending well. Where the Avalanche killed them was the transition game. And Winnipeg's one of the greatest transition teams right now in the NHL. So, again, it comes to key turnovers at certain points of the ice, taking care of the puck. And as you said about, you know, attention to detail. And that's why I'm fascinated by the Sam Bennett at center experiment, because a lot of that is on your centerman.
Well, it is certainly in part, but it's on your group as a unit. And transition takes five people. So the Flames, like most teams, well, again, so much focus on what you're doing going up the ice. But when you watch the Flames really close, they are at their best when from inside the opponent's zone to center ice, they're turning people over, and they get to go in transition. That's what NHL teams do, and that's not uncommon to the Flames. When I think about some of their best performances, yes, can it look impressive coming up in groups of five? But getting to your forecheck game and establishing that game and turning people over and limiting their transition more often than not wins you hockey games. There are so many games, well, won and lost based on who controls the game between the two blue lines. Underappreciated, in my opinion. And in that series, Colorado clearly won that battle. Clearly.
Peter Laborde is live at the Dome. Intra-squad game number two is underway. I believe it's Team White with a 1-0 lead on a goal from Zach Rinaldo. Lou, anything else in terms of changes? As you say, can't read a lot in the line combinations or whatnot, but just changes from Sunday's game that we're seeing this afternoon that maybe has caught your attention?
Well, Byron Fraze, who was on Team White, is now on Team Red today. Glenn Godden not available for the game, so keep an eye on that particular situation in terms of his availability in the next few days. And I'm not sure that Glenn was necessarily quite ready to be an opening night player, but you know what I think of him and how key he is going to be in my estimation going forward for this team in the future. So those are the most notable changes as Valimaki walks in from the left point and tests Cam Talbot, who has looked sharp in the first 10 minutes of this 15-minute period.
You mentioned Cam Talbot. It sounds like he stopped a couple of partial breakaways already. You mentioned the stop you just made on Valimaki. I'm sure you and Kelly have talked about it at length in the time since Hockey Central has been back, Lou, but I'm curious how much goaltending comes into this conversation of this camp, because we all know about the guy on the other end in Winnipeg, but Calgary's got two guys that are battling for it, and I truly do believe that, you know, yes, maybe it is going to be the slight edge to Riddick because the organization wants him to take the reins and run with it, but Cam Talbot played really well down the stretch, and they have performed or have, you know, developed into a really good duo, and in a best of five series, you don't have a lot of time to kind of sit and wait. So that's fascinating to me too.
No, it's probably the most interesting scenario of any conversation that we could have. And you could absolutely, in some regards, make a case for teams to go a number of different ways with that decision. Like you, I would lean probably to David Riddick. David has taken all the steps, probably need to see what you have. And he's the player that has one more year left on his deal. Now, it's a really big opportunity and a situation for him. Now, that's not to say if they decided to go the other way, that would surprise me either. Because in terms of Cam, well, you have somebody who has way more playoff experience. David has none. You have somebody who's won a series in 2017, was a really big part of the Oilers winning a series and then taking Anaheim basically to the brink.
Oh, we got a goal.
As Elias Lindholm is set up for a one-timer from the left circle and beats David Riddick to give Team White an advantage and an excellent look by newcomer Connor Mackey on a steam pass to find the opening. As Mackey, a highly touted college free agent signee who won't figure in this year, but he's a player, well, that having an opportunity to watch him for the first time in person has been quite impressive in terms of, I believe the Flames may have very well found somebody that's going to be a part of their defensive future.
That's awesome. And there you go. Some live scoring for you from the intra-squad game at the Dome as the Flames get set to travel to Edmonton on the weekend. And Lou, I guess you probably talked a bit about it yesterday, but pretty smart, I would think, from the organization to schedule these games like it was the qualification, because you got some games at 12:30, some at 4:30, and some at 8:30. And we know that, you know, teams out west don't play a lot of matinees. So very smart of the organization to kind of shape things up just like the schedule is going to be on August 1st.
Well, you want to try and emulate it, well, the best that you can, give your players an opportunity to feel it. And I really like the way that they have handled that scenario in the first 3 days in regards to it's exactly how it's going to look come August 1st with the 8:30, what would be a practice for the team on August the 2nd, and then the early 12:30 game. Probably the most interesting thing for me is, and it sounds like they're leaning towards a 4:30 start for their final inter-squad game on Thursday, which again, it's a 4:45 start. So, you know, take 15 minutes for what it is in terms of that. The interesting thing, pal, though, on that one is that's a back-to-back situation. So to me, when I've analyzed it and thought about it, it's great because why not give your group an opportunity to set that schedule and see what it'll be like. It would probably have even more merit to me if there was a day of separation between games number 2 and 3 of the series, but there isn't. As you know, every qualifying round series has a back-to-back, one back-to-back for everybody, and for the Flames, it's between games 2 and 3. And in the camp, you're not going to play back-to-back. So I don't necessarily feel outside of, you know, why not give somebody a 4:30 start just to think about it and get a feel. I think, again, it's incredibly smart. To me, the first 3 days are just brilliant. And why wouldn't you? Because it's going to be exactly almost the same pattern outside of yesterday's practice time was 1 o'clock. The team will shoot for something like that. But as you know, they don't have control of that situation. No. So, but I love the plan and I agree with you. It's really important to just, you know, again, so much of what is going to allow teams to be successful with all the nuances, all the differences. My friend, if ever there was a postseason about mindset and your ability to do well with it every day, this one is all about it. All about your mindset and preparation. Austin Garnett takes a pass from Eric Gustafson and beats David Rittich short side on the glove side, and it's been all white so far with 1:09 left to go in this first period of the red and white inner squad game. So Zarnik hoping to move his way up and be in consideration for opening day. He finds the back of the net.
Boy, it's still weird to hear that goal horn and then hear nothing after it. It's very odd, but just goal horn, that's the goal, and then that's it. That's all you get. Kind of full circle here, Lou. Just curious, because I know you and I have talked about this young man for a long, long time, and he, like Derek Ryan, for maybe different reasons, but Dylan Dubé missed a huge chunk of camp and came back and I believe practiced once and then played in that game on Sunday night and looked really good. As you mentioned, part of that line with Bennett and Lucic that many saw sticking out in that game on Sunday. And you know, for a lot of people, I know I think it was Scotty Crookshank we talked to on Monday morning. He's kind of joked about Dylan Dubé did a lot more rollerblading during the pandemic because he couldn't necessarily get ice time, and he was wondering how it was going to translate to the ice. And by all indications, Lou, I mean, again, it's hard to miss a week of camp and jump right in and not only start strong but finish strong. And I know Dylan Dubé has been a guy that you're you know, watching to kind of take off in a lot of ways here at some point?
I've never seen him look better. Never. Never. He's bigger. He's stronger. He's faster. He's far more comfortable with the puck. He looks like he's ready, Will, to take another step. So far, the biggest jump of anyone I've seen, and let's remember, I didn't see him the whole first week. But as I've talked about on this show, I had heard great reports about how he had looked in phase two, you know, when groups of 10 or 12 had gotten together. He looks like a different player. And as you well know, the kind of thinking I have when it comes to people on big stages, and generally it's not an accident. Well, this guy, whether he was a 16-year-old at the Memorial Cup as a Kelowna Rocket, two World Juniors, the big stage seems like it really, really has worked for him. And he could truly, when I think about X Factors, I think about Dubé and Mangiapane. I really do. I know that those won't be the true determiners. You know, the big guys generally determine goaltending is going to be a massive, massive story for the Flames in a short series. But Dubé has blown me away.
And maybe
and I only have a couple more minutes, pal, not to cut you short. But
no, that's fine. Maybe we can end here then, because you just mentioned on the big stage, and I know that you had the conversation with the head coach about players on big stages yesterday.
I did, and, you know, I'm fascinated by it. It's always really mattered. I don't think it's a coincidence. I think it can happen early. And so I asked Jeff in the availability, from his lengthy amount of experience at all kinds of different levels, here is his thoughts on why playoff and big stage scenarios work better for others than some.
You know, some guys just, they relish the moment. And when the moment's there, they're not afraid of it. You know, they're not afraid to be successful. I think that's one thing that stands out in players that, you know, have those big moments when the big moments are there, is that they have confidence in themselves, and they relish the opportunity to compete under those circumstances, and they enjoy it. And I think that's the biggest thing, is that you really need to enjoy it. You know, as much as you relish it and as much as you prepare for it, I think you, as a player, you need to enjoy it. And when those things happen, then you see guys that have that, those characteristics, those intangibles that we all talk about as coaches, it rises to the top. And
so there you go. There's Jeff Ward. And, you know, certain guys are prepared for it. I think that that's so true, Lou, isn't it?
It is. Embrace. There's the key adjective. Your ability to embrace it, look forward to it, not be overwhelmed. But there are just some athletes, and like I said, it's one of the reasons and something that I pay incredible attention to, basically from any time I start tracking a player, is how well do they perform when it's the most difficult? Because more often than not, I find a lot of those trends repeat themselves. Yes, as Jeff also alluded to, there's nothing in life like experience and reps to help you get better at it. The more of those you get, the more of those situations, Will, like any of us, is going to help. That's part
really
of
the good
it.
Stuff, man. Love chatting with you, and we'll let you go. And I know we're going to talk to you in a couple of hours, but thanks as always, pal.
What a pleasure. What a pleasure. Have a great one, my friend.
Flames insider Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Take a quick break and wrap up Hockey Central next, as Logan and I will talk a little bit about the Hart Trophy candidates announced about 2 hours ago. We'll tell you who they are and who's going to win next as we continue in Hockey Central. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Going to close things out here really quickly on Hockey Central at noon. Then back to the Dome. Pat Steinberg will join the show at 1 o'clock. And don't forget, coming up at 5:25 this evening, live on your radio and coast-to-coast on Sportsnet Television. It's the first time in 2020 since early March and the early days of spring training, the Blue Jays will face an opponent that's not themselves, as they will take on the Red Sox in the first of two exhibition games this week from Boston. Of course, opening day is on Friday, and this one will be fun tonight for any Blue Jay fan, as Nate Pearson will take the mound at Fenway Park. Again, 5:25 on the radio and on television. Looking forward to that as baseball is getting closer to its return. Opening day across the league is on Thursday. The Blue Jays will open up their season coming up on Friday. And Logan, I know you're a bit of a baseball nerd yourself. I'm sure you're looking forward to this one tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be really nice. Like they did a pretty good job of the inter-squad games, and it, you know, kind of felt like something different, but it'll be nice to see them actually play some competitive baseball.
And just curious to see how many times Nate Pearson can hit 100 on the radar gun. That's always a fun game to play for sure. Before we say goodbye and close on Hockey Central, I mentioned it, the Hart Trophy finalists have been announced by the NHL today. Of course, this one voted on by the Pro Hockey Writers Association across the game and obviously across North America. But Leon Draisaitl for the Edmonton Oilers, Nathan MacKinnon of the Avalanche, and Artemi Panarin of the Rangers are the finalists, the same as the Ted Lindsay Award. And it feels like a Draisaitl win, but man, the case for MacKinnon is so fascinating to me. And I know that people love Panarin too, but the Rangers, you know, the historical, whether you believe it or not, they were not technically a playoff team. But to me, Logan, you look at the case for MacKinnon, 43 points more than anybody else on his team. Very similar to Taylor Hall when he won a couple of years ago with the Devils. I just think if you're truly going to say the most valuable to their team, all due respect to Leon Draisaitl, I think Nathan MacKinnon is my Hart Trophy winner.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's an interesting case to be made for all of these guys, and I'm kind of with you when we had this discussion with Klein and Steinberg a few weeks ago. These were kind of the guys that we talked about, and I had a hard time with Draisaitl because as good as he was, and don't get me wrong, like he had a great season and everything, but I still think Connor McDavid's the best and most valuable piece of that team. And that's hard to say when he gets, you know, outscored by Draisaitl this year, but I just don't think he's the best guy on his team. Whereas MacKinnon and Panarin, I think you can easily make the case that without them, those two teams would look drastically different.
100%. And I don't know how the voting is going to turn out here. I think Draisaitl will end up winning it, but I think you can make a case for every guy. And again, it just feels so bad that Panarin's kind of getting left out of it, but it does feel like a two-horse race, much like all the other awards are kind of showing up to be with the Norris and the Calder. This one certainly does feel like a bit of a Draisaitl against MacKinnon, but we'll see how the votes play out. That is your three finalists. Again, we don't know when the award show will be. It'll be in early October, likely, following the conclusion of the Stanley Cup playoffs. That'll do it for us on Hockey Central, live back to the Dome for the final couple of periods and some commentary from Pat Steinberg, but also the beginning of Pinder and Steinberg. That's all coming up next right here on your home of the Flames, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.